I'm speaking with Kathleen Curry, who is an unaffiliated independent candidate for Colorado State House District 61. This includes the counties of Delta, Pitkin, Gunnison, Lake, and Summit. I'm here today to talk to Kathleen about the unaffiliated independent voter and why she chose to run as an independent. So welcome to Political Perspective, Kathleen.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, I wanted to ask you why you left the Democratic Party and chose to be unaffiliated.
Well, there were a couple of reasons, and I'll try to keep it brief. I had been a Democrat forever, ever since I was old enough to vote, and I just felt like the ideology was getting really rigid and that I didn't fit that well into what the leadership's expectations were of me. Not so much on the social issues, but more on the financial issues. I kept voting the opposite of what they would have hoped for and decided that I would be better off trying to represent this district, which is really diverse, both the old version of House District 61 and the newly improved version, very diverse, both geographically and politically. And as an independent, I'm in that's a good spot for me to be in to try to represent that, the diverse points of view. But also, I don't buy into the way the partisan structure has been handling government. And the reason I say that is there's just so many strings attached between the campaign cycle and then after you get elected and when you're trying to govern. The parties are dominating the election cycle and paying for the races. And then there are lots of strings that get pulled after you get elected. And I didn't run for office to do it that way. So there's another element, though, that I really would like to get on the record. And that is that there are such good people in both parties. And when you have, as a Democrat, I had a lot of people help me. They volunteered. They gave me money. They had every right to expect that I would vote philosophically more with them. And when I wasn't, that's not right either. I don't feel like I should get the benefit of all their help and then not basically vote with the team. And I wasn't, especially on financial issues. So it was a better step, I think, for both of us.
Can you just give me an example of a vote like that?
The biggest one was when I ran amendments to the budget to try to cap our salaries on our state employees, and the Democratic leadership felt the exact opposite, that we should be increasing the salaries, but the revenues had come in below our expectations, and I felt that we needed to cut the personnel line, and that was not the direction they wanted to head at all philosophically. So that was kind of the one that I would say caused the most ruckus towards the end of the time that I was a Democrat.
What's sort of challenging about being an independent? You were talking about how you were seeing different yard signs mixed with some people who were Republicans have your yard signs. Some people who are Democrat had your yard signs. Does that cause problems or is it actually a good thing?
Well, I have gotten calls from people saying they were upset that my sign was in someone's yard where there might have been a Republican sign and vice versa. And I'm personally proud of that because I think that shows that I'm appealing to all different types of folks. The fit with the voters is great because most people don't seem to want to be locked down into a particular ideology. They're thinking for themselves in this district especially. But what's hard is the leap of faith that people need to make, that the concern is more related to what we've never had an independent on the ballot before. We've never had an independent elected, duly elected, and their concerns are more related to process. You know, how can you be effective, Kathleen? If we like you, we like your views, we would love to see you go back, we like your background, whatever. But how can you function in a two-party system if you're not a member of either party? That is more of an obstacle than anything. And it is a bit of a leap of faith since it hasn't been done except for the 1 year that I served as an independent. And what I learned that year, and that was, you know, new territory. What I learned that year was that the focus is still, there's a core group of people in the General Assembly that are focused on the merits of the legislation and not so much on who's running it. So if you can reach out to that group of people and find them and appeal to them on the merits of the bill you're bringing or the merits of your argument, you can prevail. And I did, that's the approach I took. But the other thing I feel is necessary, regardless of what party you're in, and that is in the notion, is the notion of being respectful. And there's a lot of rhetoric in government and much less follow through, much in terms of action. There's a lot of people that are saying, okay, I'm bipartisan, I'll work across the aisle. You know, people that are running that'll say, oh, no, you know, I'm going to be able to work with the other side. There's a difference between saying you'll do that and then actually being willing to amend a bill to accommodate the concerns of the other folks. And that's where the rubber hits the road. And that's what I do. What that created, though, was a scenario where you don't always get the big, huge, momentous policy changes. You have to be willing, if you're going to take the kind of approach that I take as a legislator, this willingness to compromise, that means you get incremental change. You can't move as far as fast if you're willing to really listen to the concerns of the opponents to your proposal. And that's not always what people want. I mean, some people want those big changes to happen, but in Colorado, we are a little more moderate and we have a system with checks and balances that I think works better for the electorate because it takes longer and you have to reach agreement with people with very opposing views. In this House district, on any one day, I would be trying to represent people from Aspen and Cedar Edge or Orchard City. You know, in any one afternoon, you're asking your representative to find that place where both groups of voters would be okay. And it's not that easy to do, but it's possible.
Why do you think the number of independents are growing in this country?
It's a great question. I don't think anyone really knows the answer to that. It'd be a good PhD topic. I think if I go back to school, I'd probably want to go that route. I would say two things. That voters are either dissatisfied with the system itself, and it's an expression of their dissatisfaction. And maybe it's a combination of things, really. But that combined with their feeling that they don't fit into either ideology perfectly. So that, you know, if they're trying to find a home and they don't really feel like all of the elements of one party or the other party is a good fit for them, philosophically, I could see that being a reason to go unaffiliated in Colorado and elsewhere. But also, I would say that it could be an expression of frustration with the process itself.
I spoke with some people who are registered independents that said that they want people to fight for their vote. In other words, they don't want just them to think, oh, because they're a registered Democrat, I've got them. You know, they almost feel like they're the vote that's being, it almost counts more because the candidates are working for it a little bit more. I don't know.
I can see that. Yeah, because, well, there's two sides to that. When you're running as an independent, people don't really know what you're about. And so you don't have a label that's easily recognizable. And that's, I think, actually why people join parties is, and this isn't a bad thing, to say, okay, since I can't get to know every candidate, say for Congress or the U.S. Senate, I can't get to know that person personally. Maybe the fact that they're registered in one or the other party sheds some light on their philosophy. And that, I can see that. That's not a bad thing. But an independent, you really kind of have to connect at a personal level, or they have to check your website, or you know, you have to contact them, or you're right, it's a one person at a time process. And that can be challenging, especially if you're trying to get to 30,000 people like I need to get to. I never thought of it that way. As an independent voter, you're right. You really, both the candidates have to earn those votes.
Yeah, and they're always talking about, like, after the debates, they're always, the independents are the ones that they're surveying. The independents are the ones that they're, like, you know, sort of looking at after debates. But I just thought that was interesting. I wanted to talk about the idea that, you know, you vote for the lesser of two evils with this two-party system. What do you think about that? Because some people are afraid to almost venture out and vote for, you know, like a Green Party candidate or a Libertarian candidate.
The thing about unaffiliated voters and candidates is they aren't fringe. That's not a fringe group of voters, and that's not a fringe group of candidates. And I say that having run as an independent before. We split the vote in 2010 for the House District 61 seat literally in thirds. We each got 33%, and then the winner got a little bit over 33%. And it came down to less than 500 votes out of 30,000 ballots. So it's competitive when, especially as an unaffiliated moderate candidate. On the Green and Libertarian parties, though, I think they are in a tougher position. I think they're coming in with, you know, 5%. Maybe 10, but probably closer to 5%. And that can impact the outcome of an election. I'm not going to pretend that it doesn't. It can. And I do think that people have to be really excited about their candidate. And that's what we needed to get back to, is vote for the person you think would do the best job instead of vote against someone because you're afraid so-and-so will get in. And the key would be then to have this, the options on the ballot. And this time around, we do, you know, in, we have three folks on the Gunnison County ballot. I know that's not relevant here, but three different races where we have unaffiliated candidates running. So voters, it's starting to change. I think that we're starting to reflect more where the voters are at.
What do you think of each of the presidential candidates, and on which issues do you agree or disagree with them?
I'm not very favorable towards either candidate, regrettably. I'm actually going to vote for Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate, because he's pro-choice and because I feel that his experience as a governor is a good background, and it's because of his qualifications that I'm interested in voting for him. I feel that President Obama is where I'm at on issues like a woman's right to choose, and some environmental issues. I think he's been he's approached the mining industry with too much regulation, so I'm not happy with that. But then I do think he's showed some courage in other areas that are good. So I'm not really happy with either option, I'm sorry to say. I don't mean to offend anyone. But for me, and I'm not a one-issue person either, but what I'm concerned about are things like personal freedoms. And I don't feel the current administration is focused on allowing personal freedom. And I don't think the Romney administration would be much better based on what I've heard about women's rights. So I'm kind of discouraged on both those fronts. And that is a key issue for me. So I hope if there are some specifics I could give you, I'd be happy to do that.
What do you think of each of their approaches on the economy?
Oh, I think both of them are handing us a lot of rhetoric, and that the economy is going to get better if we can get small businesses a little bit more capital up front. The banks are sitting on a ton of money. And what we did was the pendulum swung now the opposite way. The pendulum used to be on the side where you could get a loan if you just walked in the door, or you could get credit if you just walked in the door and signed your name on a form. And now we've gone the other direction. So anybody who wants to invest and step out and try to start a little antique store or try to start a Main Street business can't get any upfront capital, and it takes a 5-year period before you can get your feet on the ground with a small business. My husband and I have two small businesses. We have a cattle and hay operation, and we have a natural beef business. And so I know what I'm talking about a little bit there, but I don't think that the government's going to is the solution to get our economy back on track. And I also am not buying that overregulation thing either. I think there might be some areas where it's too much, but that's a bunch of rhetoric too, in my view. Also, not meaning to offend anyone, but I think that the regulatory climate is there for a reason, because we needed to have certain regulations in place on certain aspects of business, and it's there because the public doesn't want to have their water contaminated. Things like that are necessary. But what I think we should be talking about more is all of us taking responsibility at our own level to not have as much debt, to try to try to go with fewer material goods, things like that. And it sounds a little bit judgmental now that I say it out loud, but it's true. We're as much a part of this equation as all the rhetoric we're hearing from Washington, D.C., but it would be helpful for the small business community to have access to credit, which right now they don't. The government can't do everything. Mm-hmm. I actually think, and if we don't get a handle on our deficit and our debt, that has more of an impact on our economy than anything. And that we have to have a commitment to that. And that means we have to go without some services.
How did you get involved in politics?
Well, I've never even taken a political science class. So I guess I ran for office the first time in 2004. I was serving as the manager of a conservancy district. I love the water business. And I was managing the Upper Gunnison River Water Conservancy District over in Gunnison. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if we had people in the General Assembly? There are 100 members total. 65 in the House, 35 in the Senate. Wouldn't it be great if we had someone there who was interested in water and had been working in that field? So I really ran because I thought that I could do something about keeping water on the Western Slope and help protect our resources and help. I wasn't sure exactly what I could do, but I knew that overall that was the issue I wanted to work on. And then I learned right away that you don't get to just work on the one thing that you are passionate about, that there are a whole lot of things on the table of value. But that was my motivation initially, and it continues to be my motivation.
What do you think the differences are between the issues that sort of matter to Western Colorado voters and the Front Range voters? What are some of the differences?
You know, what came to mind first when you said that was, I was just talking about a natural resources related issue with water management, but there's forest health, mining, I would say those two, and agriculture and water are those four different categories, are all low on the list for people on the Front Range. But I would add another thing, and that would be tourism. A lot of the people that are and they're representing their districts the best they can. They're going to the Capitol building from Aurora and Lakewood and Brighton and Westminster and Arvada. They aren't focused on tourism. They have a completely different mindset. So not only do we have to help them understand our concerns about natural resources and agriculture and issues like that, but we also tourism isn't a top priority. So if you have a debate over how much money to put into tourism, to them, that they would just as soon have zero going into it, because it does, from their perspective, Front Range perspective, there's very little value for their voters, for their people at home, if we put money into tourism marketing, for example. So I think that those are just a few examples right there. One thing that is driving a lot of the leaders from the Front Range, though, that we aren't really wrestling with as much, would be labor issues. I think that is something that they have, that's a heartfelt issue for a lot of people on the Front Range and all the way down to Pueblo and up to Fort Collins. And we're not hearing about that as much here, where the unions are at on a particular issue. It's just not as dominant on this side of the divide. So things like I-70 congestion on the Front Range side and I-25 congestion, that's not an issue for us except for up on the Summit County side with the I-70 problem there. So there are definitely some differences.
What do you think of some of the political movements in the U.S., like the Tea Party or Occupy movements?
I think from a 30,000-foot perspective, what that's telling us is that there are definitely other points of view where people feel like their voice and their opinion might not be represented or heard if we just stuck to the conventional Democratic philosophy and Republican philosophy. Having said that, though, I think they are not mainstream, that the majority of voters wouldn't fit into either one of those two examples real well. But that shows me that our system is healthy, that there are all kinds of thinkers out there that need to be represented and taken into account when people govern. When elected officials make decisions, that they need to be mindful of the fact that there is a broad spectrum of views. So, and then the Occupy movement in particular, I thought was fascinating, and I still do. I think that there should be a lot of pushback on our financial system, and that's what I took away from that movement. So I was really happy to see that. And then I think the Tea Party movement is often misrepresented. That there are a lot of folks that are involved with that for really good reasons and have been put into a little category that might not accurately represent where they're coming from. Now, the independent movement, and there is such a thing, especially on the two coasts, very active in New York City and very active in California. We are behind the curve in Colorado, yet our registrations would indicate that we should have a quote independent movement in the state, but it's not coordinated. And the lead on this would be California. Arizona is coming up fast, but they have a lower percentage of unaffiliated voters than we do. Yet they're more active and more coordinated, they're collaborative. So I think that there's a potential, and we're going to see that increase, that the voters are out ahead of us. There's a reason that 54% of the voters in House District 61 chose not to join a party in the last quarter. We had 54% of the new registered voters in the last quarter did not join either party. Again,
it's the biggest party.
Yeah. And going back to what you asked me in the beginning, though, what does that really mean? What is that telling us? I don't know that we really have a good handle on that, other than that they use their registration form to say, I'm going to leave my options open, or I don't fit in, or I don't like I don't know what it's all about, but it's telling us something.
So you were talking about how there is an independent movement. It's not really an organized party. You have people who are registered independent but always vote Democratic, or mm-hmm. registered independent but they always vote Republican. Are you talking about now something where it's more organized and they actually vote independent?
Oh, it's good. I'm so glad you asked that, because what it is a structural orientation. It's a process movement. There isn't any, both in New York and in California, they're not focusing in on an ideology, say, for example, a political ideology that people would have to follow. So it's not, you're exactly right, it's not a party. But what they're oriented towards on both sides of the United States, and now more so in the central states, is creating an even playing field so that you don't have statutory obstacles and structural obstacles for people who might want to run as an American Constitutionalist Party candidate, or a Green Party candidate, or a Libertarian, or in my case, an unaffiliated candidate. And when I say structural, I mean things like, in Colorado, the law says that third-party candidates and unaffiliated candidates can only accept half of the donation amount. of a Democrat or a Republican. So that right there puts anybody who wants to provide the voters with a choice at a disadvantage because they cannot raise the same amount of money. And that's a law in Colorado that could be changed, but that's a structural thing. Another example would be our semi-closed primaries, that independents can't vote in primaries unless they change their affiliation that day and, you know, change it back later if they want to. Well, that's possible. We have a, you know, we have a semi-open process, which is good, better than having it be closed. But those are areas where the independent movement is focusing on primaries, on redistricting. This concept of districts being targeted for particular outcomes when we have the redistricting process for both the legislature and for Congress. There are the people in the independent movement are very committed to trying to create a fair process for the districts so that they reflect the people and that they're fair. So that if you want to run in a district that traditionally has been drawn to have a Republican outcome, but you're not a Republican and you want to run in that district, that you'd have a fair chance. Those are the kinds of structural and the reforms that the independent movement has been focusing on.
And I've been speaking with Kathleen Curry, who's an unaffiliated candidate or independent candidate for Colorado State House District 61. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.